Welcome to Paw Print Academy, your blueprint to raising better dogs. My name is Ryan, and I'll be your host for this journey. I've got my trusty co-host here, Brianna.
Hello.
And together, we're bringing you real-world training insights built on leadership, structure, and proven methods. We record this podcast with live clients on the line in one take with live, unscripted questions and answers. At the end of the day, this podcast is a lot more than just teaching your dog to sit or stay. It's about building trust, creating calmness, and becoming the kind of leader your dog truly needs. We do that with our three-pillar method of trust, obey, and perform. Together, we'll show you how these three pillars shape every step of training. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. All right, episode 7, puppy socialization. Doing it right without overwhelming your pup. I am super excited about this one tonight because puppies are so much fun. Puppies are super fun. So tonight we're going to talk about the way that we introduce our puppy to the world. It kind of sets the foundation for confidence and stability. And we talk about confidence and stability like there are these buzzwords. But proper socialization is about controlled positive exposure and not just throwing them into chaos, but to map out their early learning patterns.
Right.
And so this one goes back and forth. It's like, well, how old is a puppy? Right off the bat, I'm going to go with it. It depends on the breed and it depends on their maturity. Similar to kids, you're going to have grownups that are are still kids.
Right. Exactly.
At heart. When we're talking about dogs, stand by. Did you figure it out? We're having a mic issue. Bree's going to keep working on that. I'm going to continue on. So when we talk about, once again, these are the dangers of doing it live in one take.
Okay. I think I'm good.
Are you alive now?
Yeah, I think so. There we go. My cable was just funny.
Okay. Continue on. How old is a puppy? So, right off the bat, if I was going to define a puppy, I'd say 18 months or less.
Yeah, for sure.
This whole concept of like, well, they're still a puppy at 2 years. Well, they might still exhibit some puppy behavior at the 2 year mark, but I just can't get behind that.
Right. They're definitely growing out of all of their puppy habits by that point.
Yeah. Year and a half. That's where I call it at.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about early exposure, that early exposure and how they're exposed to things and what they're exposed to, it absolutely shapes their like lifelong behavior. I just did an eval for a little puppy that was 10 weeks old. And the puppy is going to, just like all puppies, is going to exhibit all of these behaviors, but it's learning. And so if we don't show up in its life, in every interaction that it has, it is constantly learning, it's constantly testing.
Yeah.
So you got to show up and you got to show up with that leadership and that stability and that consistency, which we've talked about many, many times, so that in every interaction, they're seeing the same example, which is, you want me to be calm, or, you want me to be, you want me to do this, you want me to do that. We don't have to train the dog. Well, so most owners don't need to focus on training their dog to be excited. The dog's going to figure that out on their own.
Right.
We got to train the dog to be calm. Now, when you're working with a working line breed, there is absolutely something to be said for developing their drive, right?
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really important. But a lot of owners develop plenty of drive on their own inadvertently, and then they don't know how to develop the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're going to talk about. But in the terms of socialization. Socialization is often defined in people's minds as dogs meeting other dogs. But that's not the end of it.
Right.
Puppies are most impressionable between 8 and 16 weeks.
Yep.
Right. So we're talking that 2 month to 4 month time period where you are able to just pattern things, and that puppy is going to like figure that out, and it's going to leave a lasting impression.
Yep.
No matter what it is, good or bad.
Yeah.
So very impressionable time. And positive experiences, they build resilience and they reduce future reactivity. The more positive experiences that the dog has in many different facets and different ways, it's going to increase the likelihood that the dog's not going to react out of fear or aggression or some other like facet of the buzzword that we like to throw around, reactivity. Okay. Just like a positive experience will shape their life, a negative experience can absolutely shape their life.
Right.
So it's really important. Go ahead.
So let's give some examples. I don't know if that's in one of your questions, but like, what are some examples? Because I think when we say positive and negative experiences,
yeah,
we understand what those are.
Okay.
But I don't think that everybody kind of understands what a positive experience is, because all the time we kind of see people with their puppies out and they're like, yeah, this is great. But
right, it's great for the owner, but not for the puppy. Ooh, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and so one of the places we train at, brewery, super busy almost all the time. When we take dogs to socialize, we're there like at opening. And not because we want like a beer at 11 a.m., but because we want to work with the dogs in an environment where there's not floods of people in the room, right? There's one, maybe two. They're spaced out. The place has plenty of room. There's outside, there's inside. Like, we still have the ability to work the dog in, but there's not an overwhelming amount of people. There's almost never dogs there. And if so, like I said, there's plenty of room. All the time we see people there with puppies on the busiest nights of the week. And one, that puppy is doing nothing but scanning all of these feet, like running by him, all of the hands reaching down for him, the dogs that are pulling over to them, different things like that. And so positive experiences to us are slow environments where you can go and you can sit down and you can relax with your dog. And maybe one person comes up and says, hey, can I pet your puppy? And you, at that point, if your dog is nice and relaxed, then maybe that works for you. Maybe you give them a piece of food and you say, yeah, sure, I'm actually working with them right now on socialization. Can you try giving them some food? That's a positive experience, because that person is giving the dog something that it wants instead of just sticking their hand out and petting them. And maybe the dog doesn't want that, but it doesn't know how to communicate that yet because it's a puppy.
Yeah. Another thing I'll throw out. So the next supporting point that I had written down was that controlled introductions matter more than the quantity of the introduction.
Right. It's like going out to the brewery and passing your puppy around everybody for everyone, yes, to hold.
Yep.
Too much.
Right. You don't need 100 interactions.
Right.
You need 10 solid ones.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I was going to add to that though, is that just because we're shaping this conversation towards puppies doesn't mean that older dogs don't benefit from this as well.
Oh, yeah.
We're just talking about how with puppies, it's even more important because of that very, very impressionable like age and time frame.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that if you've got a dog that's outside of there, or your dog is 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, that they can't still learn and they can't still adjust by doing the same thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And that quality of that interaction is better than the quantity.
Yeah.
Okay, so what So what would you say that the most important thing is to expose a young puppy to in the first few weeks when somebody goes to a shelter or they go to a breeder, they buy this cute little fuzzy creature who has no idea how to even walk on their own feet? What are you, if you went and got a dog tomorrow?
Yeah.
Don't do that. First of all, don't. She lights up. She's already thinking about it in her head.
I was reading about a foster German Shepherd. Just kidding.
Were you really? Because someone.
Yeah, I was reading it in our inbox.
Yes. Oh, right. Yeah. I was like, yeah, because someone just reached out. If, by the way, someone just reached out to, I was like, wait a second, that sounds familiar.
Right.
Someone reached out to us that they are looking for a forever home for a little German Shepherd puppy.
Or a foster, I think. Or a foster will situation. At this point.
If you are interested, hit us up.
Right. There's not a whole lot of information we have. Right, it's I don't have a lot. Female German Shepherd.
They just reached out on the business page and was like.
Right, that she can no longer care for. She was a temporary foster.
She claims that the dog has no issues, just that her cat does not like it.
Right, gets bullied by the cat.
Gets
I don't know really what that means, but I'm sure people that have dogs and cats probably know what that means, but
we don't do cats.
Don't know anything about cats.
We have too many dogs.
Right.
We
can't. All right, back on track. Right. But side note, yes.
Back out of the rabbit hole.
First, most important thing.
What are you exposing to your brand new puppy that you get tomorrow?
Yeah.
What are you exposing it to first?
Grooming methods. I'm going to start touching paws. I'm going to start touching, ears. I'm going to start like lifting gums. I'm going to start working them through that in a calm, relaxed way, which means like treating them through it. Basically, I grab their paw, I hold it, I give them a yes, and then I give them a piece of food.
Yep.
And I'll work that through their breakfast. I'm going to work on like real world noises that go on in your house every day. The vacuum, the doorbell, people knocking, blenders. If you like make smoothies every morning, that's a tough one. People like don't realize and you turn on a blender and that's like one of the loudest pieces of machinery in your house.
Right. Probably. It wakes up humans.
Right. If you do a lot of yard work, yard tools, for guys, like all the crazy tools you have that make all those weird noises. So I don't know. You guys have
you're not
going to
name
loud.
Any of them.
Go right. Ahead. I don't even know what the ones are called that are super loud. So whatever. But different things like that. Riding in the car. That's a really big one.
Yeah.
Because a lot of puppies will get car sick and people are like, oh, my dog gets car sick. I just won't take them in the car.
Right.
You have to take your dog to the vet.
Right.
I mean, there's mobile vets. Don't get me wrong. But at some point, you're going
at
to
some
need
point, you're
your
have
dog
to, take your dog
to enter
somewhere.
The car.
Right. You got to take your dog somewhere.
If you don't want to, you're going to have to.
Yeah.
And so those are the things where when you get to those moments, you don't want it to be the absolute hardest moment or the absolute worst experience for the dog.
Right.
So those are my things.
Right. A lot of times the dog gets sick, not just because of the movement, but because of all the extra things. It's a new sight, new sound, new feeling, new all of this stuff. And all of it together creates a situation where the dog gets sick.
Right. Dexter, when we first got him, was car sick. And so you just took him on tiny, short little drives.
Short little drives.
Yeah. Right. And worked on him laying down in a kennel.
Correct. So start with a very small kennel so they can't move around.
Yeah.
Then you get a little bigger and a little bigger, and then they stay in the back, like of the trunk, and then they can move to a seat, and then it's exactly like everything else that we do in dog training. You start small and you build on it.
Yeah, I was just talking to a guy that was driving like from Bergall, and that's like a hour drive or something like that, and he said, always like at the same exact moment in Hampstead, which is halfway, the dog would get sick, and I was like,
interesting.
Just stop your car like 5 minutes before you know where that location is and let your dog out.
Yeah.
And then put him back in the car and finish your drive. I guarantee you that's going to help your problem, if not like completely eliminate
it. Pattern. Just break the pattern.
And then after a while, once your dog gets used to it, then you can do the entire car ride.
Love that advice.
Just tiny steps.
Okay. So I wrote down to share an example of a dog who, like a dog whose behavior was shaped strongly by early socialization. My example is going to be Dexter.
Yeah.
Because I did a ton of shaping with different things. And now he's attached my hip and doesn't listen to Brianna at all.
Right. You trained him too hard. He listens. But sometimes he challenges me, but he listens,
but he's always looking for like, you're not my dad. Where's my dad?
Right. 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 You are definitely his safety net, his right. dad for sure.
Yep. So just like you can shape all of those things, it is important to vary the experiences, right?
Yeah.
And one of those things has to also be the handler and who works with them the most, right?
Right. But that's something like to honestly like touch on because we're dog trainers, right? And so everybody expects mm-hmm. our dogs to be top notch. For one, Dexter's only 12 months old.
Yeah.
And for two, a lot of it goes into his breed because we've known and had him since he was born and know his parents and know the genetics and know like the dad, super stable, really calm, relaxed, like service dog, like handler.
Yeah. Brianna was putting little Q-tips between his little paw pads when he was 6 days old.
Yeah. So cute.
Yeah.
And even like when you saw them growing and growing and growing, like you could tell the differences in temperament between those dogs. And that was just genetics, right? Because they weren't doing training at those ages. So you can genetically see the difference in those dogs. And as hard as we have always worked for Dexter to like develop and things like that, there's still things where genetically, like the dog isn't going to like that or adjust well to that. And you really have to like zone in on it and focus on it for a while.
Yeah. Yep. And control. So let's talk about, controlled exposure, right? Usually controlled exposure beats, so let's talk about the terms first. Controlled exposure, where we're going to limit the variables that the dog is going to have to process in a certain amount of time. Flooding is the opposite, where we're going to bring in a whole bunch of variables all at the same time so that the dog doesn't necessarily can't process all of those things and to a certain degree has to kind of let go of control towards whatever it was that they were initially reactive to or scared of or et cetera. And as long as we follow with that flooding technique, as long as we also provide the dog a very safe interaction and show the dog with that action that, see, you're still okay, you're still safe, nothing bad happened. Sometimes flooding, and I will say sometimes flooding works very, very well. Mm-hmm. That being said, we typically try to avoid flooding. And the reason for that is because we can do a lot with controlled exposure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that flooding is an irrelevant technique. It's not that flooding is a dangerous technique, but it's not necessarily the right technique for every dog.
Yeah.
Controlled exposure is pretty good across the across almost all the dogs. We only use flooding when our controlled exposure really doesn't work, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So socialization doesn't really mean to just let your puppy meet everyone and everything all at once, right? We want to control all those variables. So when we are providing a nice, like just a few calm, positive encounters, that outweighs dozens of chaotic flooding ones.
Yeah.
Because it patterns to the dog what to expect.
Right. And one thing that I want to mention is that even if you don't necessarily flood the dog, something else could flood the dog.
Right, right. Yeah, flooding isn't necessarily me flooding the dog.
Right. So the perfect example is taking your dog to the dog park for the first time. And you take your dog, little puppy, And you go, you even go into the small dog side, right? That's fine. Your dog's a puppy. But if that dog park already has six dogs in it, and I've seen those dogs parks. We work outside of them. When a dog comes up, those dogs crowd the gate.
Right.
100%.
We want to see the new guy.
Yeah. Who's this?
Who's this?
Yeah. I haven't smelled this dog yet. Let me smell you. Right. And the dog immediately is like, whoa, especially as a puppy, right? Yeah. Because it's all new dogs. Yep. And one, your dog is either going to be somewhat nervous because they're being overcrowded and flooded by the amount of dogs in their face, or two, they're going to be super excited and learn that running up to dogs and just meeting them at the fence is an amazing amount of like fun and overstimulation.
So fun.
And that's how it begins, right? Yeah.
Right. And so flooding in that like sense, flooding or overexposure, it often backfires. And then it ends up just creating fear instead of confidence.
Right. It's like,
so
you take your first
can
grader,
go well.
Right.
But it also cannot.
Right. And we always shoot for, let's just make sure it's a good idea. Right.
Right. I really want to stack the cards in the favor of it going well.
Right. It's just like, ooh, such a good one just popped in my brain. I can think of metaphors and things all the time with these. It's just like wearing your seatbelt in a car.
Okay. Right?
It's like you could get an accident or you could not if you're like going out at a slow time of day. But regardless of whether you could or not, you should probably just put your seatbelt on.
Take precautions.
Just take precautions. Just be safer on the safer side, yeah, than on the side of, you know, I don't know that anything's going to go wrong today. I don't think anything's going to go wrong today. But it takes one dog. And I just witnessed it 2 days ago at the dog park of a... It's a Great Dane Border Collie mix. Only dog I've ever seen like that. It looked like a Dr. Seuss character. I kid you not. It was a huge dog, but with fluffy ears. It was crazy. And a husky. And the husky had been at the dog park by himself for a while. Uh-huh. And the Great Dane came in. Everything was fun and games until it wasn't. And the husky was way too overbearing trying to like mount the Great Dane. And that dog was not having it, but it's big and goofy and doesn't know how to work its legs. So it was like flailing everywhere. And then the owners are over there trying to separate it. One of them was like taking a nap in the hammock.
What?
Had no, yeah. I don't even know why they have a hammock. It's the only time I've ever seen that. But it just turned chaotic so fast. And I was like, all right, time to go.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so other than that, what are some everyday mistakes that you see owners make when they're trying to socialize their puppy? We talked about the brewery or just a public place where you take them when there's too much going on.
Right.
Because I really want to reiterate this. We don't get on the mic each week and talk about this stuff in a way that we are trying to be like, no, we know the right way to do this and no one else does. We're also not like we're bringing this to you really as a teammate, as a team member. We want everybody to succeed. We want everyone to get better. And so we talk about these things not in a way that like we haven't made a lot of these mistakes. We've done all of this and we've learned from it. And so that's why we're sharing it with you. So bringing your dog out in public, that is what everyone wants to do so that then their dog's not scared, right? They know that in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that we see it a lot where the dog is just overwhelmed by way too much going on, way too fast. And so that's what we're talking about with that.
Mm-hmm.
What's another example?
I think my two probably big ones are letting kids chase puppies.
Right. So the catch me if you can game.
Right.
Going both ways.
Right. Yeah, for sure. It's just a natural thing that like kids typically try to do is just like chase a puppy around because they like to run. And one, it can either scare the puppy or they can find a huge fun in it. And then you have a puppy that's stealing your things and running away because they want you to play with them. And I think the second one for me would probably be not paying attention to body language. A lot of times we look for like tail tucked. That's a really like big sign that your dog is uncomfortable. The whale eye that we talk about, kind of like side eyeing things where their eyes are like, they look like they're like, oh my gosh, this is way too much. And also one that people don't really pick up on is like lip licking. If they're like flicking their tongue and like licking their lips a lot, it's not because their lips are dry. It's because they're stressed out. Right. Itching is a big one. They're like, oh, my dog is itchy. Not itchy. Yawning. Your dog is not tired. Your dog is stressed most of the time.
Yeah.
Puppies can be a little bit different because they do sleep a lot more, so they can yawn a little bit more excessively than adult dogs because they are tired more often. But a lot of the times that falls back to stress.
So I started doing something that really, really helped me. And that was when I'm watching dog behavior and a dog like just sits down right where they are and they start itching, or
yeah,
they like just randomly like yawn.
Mm-hmm.
I just say in my head, sometimes I even say it out loud, I just go stress.
Right.
And when I ghost like stressed, it helps my brain like look, does that fit? Are they stressed about something?
Right.
And almost like 9 times out of 10, I can point to what it would be.
Right.
And be like, oh right, I just told it to sit or go to their place and they like didn't really want to go to their place, or they came off of their place and I said, no, place. And I put them back there and they went back, mm-hmm, and then they got there, mm-hmm, and then they like sit down and they're itching.
Yeah.
And it's like stress.
Right. It's like humans when we like pick our fingernails or like twirl our hair. It's a sign of stress. Are we going, hey, I'm stressed, and biting our fingernails? No, we're just nonchalantly biting our fingernails. And sometimes we don't even understand that we're doing that. We don't even notice. Nope. We're like biting our lip and somebody's like, are you okay? Yeah, why? Because you're biting your lip. I didn't even realize.
Yeah. But if you really like were to deep dive it, you could probably figure out why in that moment.
Yep.
And be like, oh, right, I have been kind of worried about this one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
So it's just a trick that helps me to kind of, I guess, be more cognizant of, mm-hmm, what the dog is feeling.
Yeah.
And maybe they did just have an itch. That's fine.
Right.
Like, we're not saying this is 100%. Maybe they just had an itch and you're like, I have no idea why they would be stressed. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally just gave them a treat.
Yeah.
Cool. Maybe it was just an itch. Maybe they have fleas. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. It could be a lot of different things.
Right. A lot of dogs have like dry skin in the winter, you know, and they need like oatmeal shampoo baths or whatever. Like there's all sorts of things, but just be aware of what your dog's doing and just be like, oh, they itched. And if you see it in another weird situation and it's not typical, be like, oh, that's weird. They itched.
So what would you set up to be like a controlled exposure for a puppy?
Ooh, put that puppy on a leash when people come over.
Right. Don't give it the ability to just charge the door
and jump on people. It's the worst habit. And I understand it for sure, but it builds so much drive in the dog to do that so quickly. Yeah.
Right, because it's super self-gratifying.
So self-gratifying.
It's like, yeah, I like get to go see these people.
They're leaping into their arms. It's like when your kid runs up to you after like their first day of daycare and they're like, mom or dad. And they're like, yeah. And you just like open your arms and like grab them.
Tons of excitement.
Like, oh yeah, I am so excited to see you.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. Socialization continues beyond puppyhood though. And so it's really, it has to become like part of the dog's lifestyle. It's not really just something that we can do just when they're a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
Puppy socialization, super, super, super important. But dog socialization in general, equally as important.
Yeah.
It never stops, right? And I can think of a whole bunch of ways that like you can socialize, quote unquote, your dog, right? You can take them places. You can have them meet people. You can have them meet dogs. You can have them not meet dogs. That one's really important. We do that in our group class all the time. Mm-hmm. Like our number one rule at the group class is none of the dogs are allowed to meet.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, oh, well, how are they going to socialize? They're socializing.
Right. They smell all those dogs.
They smell all those dogs. We walk them past the dogs all the time, but we're just not going to let them actually get nose to nose. And it's not about, it's not about anything other than creating the other side of the coin. You got to balance it. Most dogs, when they get to be around other dogs, they get to play with those dogs. So when are you going to show them that sometimes they don't? Mm-hmm. And most people don't have other dogs that they can do that with. And so we do it in the group class.
Yeah.
That's why. all right. Continued exposure helps prevent regression. So when I wrote down this point, regression is this thing that everyone's like super scared of, right? Because, cool, I worked on this for like 6 weeks and it was going really, really well, but then I took a break and things got busy and now I tried it again and suddenly my dog's super reactive again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Consistency is key.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's no perfect solution to that other than those little bits. It is much more important, and we talked about this in the consistency episode, but it is much more important to get those repetitions of that, even in short, tiny little durations, than it is to add up, you know, I worked on this all day. Much more important. Dogs that only see the same environment may develop new fears later on when they go into these other environments.
Yep.
And so we can avoid that by showing the dogs more and more and more, as much new things and places and stuff that we can when they're younger. It's impossible to introduce the dog to every single thing that's out there.
Right. It and really is.
So the unfortunate reality is, yeah, your dog's going to have some negative experiences. They're definitely going to see some things that they're like, ah, I'm scared of that.
Yeah.
But when you realize that, take a moment, take the opportunity to work through that so that then the dog sees that this is not so much of an issue. All right, let's highlight that. So, right now in the where we are in the season is we have dogs that that we work with that are super scared of the Halloween decorations.
I mean, every dog right now is
pretty much every dog.
Fake cats in the yard. The fake cats have pulled out. There's multiple houses in our neighborhood with the fake cats. The same fake cats in their yard, all over their yard. There's like nine of them. First of all, why are there so many of them? They obviously came in a pack because both yards have so many cats.
So many.
And now that I hate it, I love the opportunity.
Right, but those dogs do not like them.
They don't love them.
They're two-dimensional flat cats. One dog is like, what is that? Right, yeah.
At nighttime, they look kind of real also. I walked by one last night and I was like, that one would get me even as a human. And so it's great exposure, but what I want people to realize is that if you walk by that cat and your dog like jumps or is like, oh, what is that? Or walks to the other side of you, you now have to stop and you have to go back to those cats and you either have to do some laps back and forth until your dog is relaxed or you have to sit by them.
Right.
And you have to let them work through that stress, because if that item stresses them out and they just walk by it and keep on going, they're gonna just learn that that item was scary and I panicked a little bit and we just kept on going. You have to show them sometimes that things aren't what they think it is.
Yeah.
We walked by a pumpkin the other day and the dog I was walking was like, whoa, what is that? And I was like, go sit by it. Go sit by it. And she like sniffed it and she was like, I don't know what this is, but I guess it's not gonna bite me, right?
Right. So,
and those are the things that you have to be willing to do, is like work your dog through it. Be like, just go over and sniff it. You touch it.
Right. So there was a good video on Maligator Mom had a good video on Facebook on because of Halloween. It was this little ghost like stuffed animal
pillow
thing that was on a couch, and her little Malinois was like, absolutely not.
Right.
I'm not dealing with that thing. And she was talking about how it's that is fine because it's an opportunity for them to learn.
Yeah.
And so as they're scared of it, you don't go in and coddle them. You don't go in and tell them, no, no, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. No, you just stand there, check out. But at the moment where they take an opportunity, instead of being fearful, where they get curious, mm-hmm. that's where you jump in.
Yeah.
At the moment where they're like, well, what is this thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's where you jump in with that leadership to show them, yeah, yeah, check it out. Look at it. Get close to it. Sniff it. And then they figure out, and in this case, their little Malinois figured out that, oh, I can bite this thing. Yeah. And then she engaged the toy with them, and now it was a fun thing. It was like, ah, cool. I'm not scared of that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just as an example, but I felt like it applied.
Yeah, for sure.
We have no affiliation with Maligator Mom, just so you know. What else do I got written down here? Lifelong confidence. It comes from steady, varied experiences. It is time consuming and it's not done overnight.
Yeah.
So you have to be patient. It's just about racking up those slow, consistent events that take place naturally throughout the dog's life.
Yeah.
It's this, we're going to react to these things the same way, day in and day out, as they learn and figure these things out.
Right. And I think a lot of people get stuck on going to like one place and being like, well, I'm exposing my dog. I'm exposing my dog. It's like the brewery because it's the most dog friendly. And you can just go up there and sit for like hours with your friends. Right. But that's not necessarily always like what you need to be doing. For people that don't know like stores that are dog friendly, it's like Dick's Sporting Goods, Academy, Hobby Lobby. Was it Home Goods?
Yeah, Home Goods.
Home Goods. Lowe's, Home Depot, Tractor Supply.
Yeah.
Those are stores that a lot of people don't know about, on top of all the restaurants and coffee shops and things like that. But those are places
most restaurants that have outdoor seating will let you have dogs in that outdoor seating.
Right. And those are places that you can go that you don't see 25 dogs, right? There's hardly any dogs. I've never seen a dog in Dick's Sporting Goods, but was I there with
Academy,
a dog?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
I was. And I called ahead of time and made sure it was fine. And they're like, yeah, because as long as they don't, you know, pee on anything or eat anything.
Yep.
And those are the places that are really good exposure for puppies because you're not overstimulating them with things. There's it's a huge store. I don't think I've ever been in to one of those places when it's been like, oh, there's people like all over. I can't get down any aisles.
Right.
So there's tons of room to move and just walk around for a bit, hang out, and then you can leave.
Yep. Love that. You don't even have to have a vest for your dog.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to have a, it doesn't have to be a service dog thing.
It's not a service dog thing at all.
Nope.
What's a creative way that you'd expose like an older dog to things without like overwhelming them? Distance.
Right, for sure.
For sure the thing.
Right. Yeah,
so and I teach this in our 6-week immersion course is like the last lesson. I like to go out in public with the dog and actually like teach clients, okay, this is how I take my dog out.
Yeah.
And this is the process because no matter where you go, your dog's at some point going to see something that's going to get them either riled up or like in a frustrated way or in an excited way.
Yeah.
Or in a fearful way.
Mm-hmm.
And we can kind of like damper that. We can alleviate that if we go slowly and kind of work through it, right? So we get out of the car, we go straight to go to the bathroom, and then we start at a distance and we start closing that distance slowly. Yeah. And if we get too close to something that is triggering for whatever reason, we just incorporate additional distance.
Right. And if you're working with an older dog or a super fearful dog, it's like you can just go to the parking lot. You don't have to go inside. I think people set a goal in their mind when they take their dog out that they're going to go to Lowe's. They're going to walk through like even certain aisles or through certain sections or, you know, do one lap around the store and go from inside to outside and then we're going to leave.
Yeah.
But if your dog is stressed when you get them out of the car, they're going to be stressed the entire time you're in that store.
Yeah.
And they're going to be stressed and excited to get out. Away from right. that stressor, which is the store,
right,
to get back to the car. And so you have to start at the very beginning of that process. And that's getting out of the car sometimes. For some dogs that are overwhelmed outside and so overstimulated that as soon as we have clients sometimes be like, as soon as I take them outside, they're stressed.
Mm-hmm.
You got to start at the front door then.
Right.
Inside the front door, yep, with the front door open.
Smaller step.
Maybe you have to start with the front door cracked, but you have to take such baby steps sometimes that I think people set really big goals and sometimes it can be counterintuitive in how it works for the dog based on how they are. And if you're at like a puppy stage, that's totally different, right? Because most of the time they're excited to go new places as long as they're not too like big, loud, and scary.
Yeah.
But for older dogs that also like maybe they're fearful, those are going to be the tiny like little exposure steps that you have to take.
Mm-hmm. Michael and Heidi asked, what are the pros and cons of having a puppy visit and free play in a fenced area with Maverick?
Is it a puppy that they're going to be exposed to repeatedly would be one question of mine. But I think if it's a dog that they're going to meet over and over and it's going to be coming into their territory over and over, I have no problem with two puppies meeting, especially if I know the temperament, which most puppies, if they're, you know, they're genetically sound and haven't had any terrible experiences, are generally going to be happy, excited puppies.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also say there's a cap on the age of which I will let a puppy do that, because some puppies get real big real fast.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the size difference of those puppies? What's the energy difference in those puppies? Are they both ready to like go at it?
Right.
And once you start that process and they're already playing, are they going to listen to you when you ask them to cut it out?
Right.
So a lot of times like starting on a leash is a really good option for that, because it gives you some like leeway and some leverage to kind of like step on it, pull the dogs back if you need to. But if we're talking about puppies and they're going to be repeatedly exposed to that dog, I generally am like, yeah, just like let them go, let them play. And if you need to, like just end it.
Right. So the pros are it can lead to very successful interactions that are very gratifying to both dogs.
Yeah.
Right. And honestly, that's probably the best case. And that's why you would want to do it.
Right.
Is because, cool, the dogs get to run around and they get to socialize and they get to figure out who's who. Where it goes wrong is usually when you lose all control of the situation.
Yeah.
And now the dogs can increase their, they can both increase their excitement levels and play off of each other to continue to spiral and increase the excitement levels till such time as they no longer, they have so much value. You've brought such high value to their life in that moment that now when you say, hey, come, or hey, knock it off, or hey, let's go inside, or whatever, they're like, nah, don't care.
Right.
Because then you've now created, and the tricky part is you haven't created a bad situation until you've now told them to do something.
Until you've given a command.
And at that point, you're teetering on the problem, on a problem area.
Yeah.
Because now they're so engaged to each other and they have so much value.
Yep.
You have lost value
yep.
because they're so excited and so engaged and they don't want to stop that interaction.
Right.
So now you say something and now you are bound to hold them accountable,
right?
But you can't, and they don't care because they have all the value that they need.
Yeah.
And that is where I go, ooh, well, we can avoid that in a couple different ways. We can maintain accountability by
yep.
dogs dragging a line.
Yeah.
We can maintain accountability by using an e-collar. We can maintain accountability by limiting their interaction and not giving them full freedom
yep.
to engage each other. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't see Maverick specifically is a pretty happy-go-lucky dog.
Right.
He's not
usually kind of tell.
Right. He's not really dog reactive.
Yeah.
He enjoys being around other dogs.
Right.
We definitely saw that at the group class.
Yeah.
But
he's for sure like, hey, yeah. Hey, my name's Maverick. What's your name?
yes, that's him. But he's not reactive in a overbearing way. He doesn't take other dogs. He doesn't really like try to dominate
right.
the interaction.
Try to, like, bombard
he doesn't respect hard. Other dogs' space though either.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yet.
Right.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Which it is for all dogs. So Heidi and Michael, those are the things that I would worry as you guys are the owners of Maverick, I would worry less about how that puppy is probably going to interact or negatively affect him.
Yeah.
And I would be a little more concerned about how Maverick's behavior could negatively affect the puppy's behavior.
Yeah.
Right? Because if Maverick and the puppy get along really, really well, that puppy is going to look up to Maverick significantly more and take on whatever Maverick's behaviors are.
Yep.
More so than Maverick probably will the puppy.
Right. For sure. And I also think
right?
when
just
like,
because that's a natural.
When we like match dogs to play, we typically try to match energies.
Yes.
Not necessarily even sizes. My two, four dogs combined, I've got two bundles of dogs that I like to let out of time because I don't like to overwhelm myself and let four dogs out at a time. It's too much, right? I get it. It's too much. So I like to do our biggest, most rambunctious, Dexter, and little Frenchie checkers. They're
yeah.
my favorite combo. They will get out there and they will chase each other around. And he's super gentle with her out of all the dogs.
Right.
So gentle with her. He'll like push her with his nose and she's like, oh, I'm on my back.
Yeah.
And they're the most like relaxed combo. And they will disengage, go to the bathroom and they're like, hey, we're ready to come in now.
Yep. And they'll just stand next to each other.
Yeah, they'll just stand next to each other.
Right. Great energies together.
Nala and Dexter, I like to match them together because they're both super high energy. So they're going to wear each other out. They're going to like go at it, have all the fun in the world. Or
at the expense of the lawn.
At the expense of grass.
And there's no grass left. Yeah, no.
There's grass. yeah. We have baby grass growing finally.
Constant work in progress.
Constant grass seeding. I've never bought so much grass seed. but anyways. And I will tell you, like, the worst two would be, like, Dexter and Gabe. Both the boys, they just get out there. Dexter likes to chase Gabe. Gabe's like, no, I don't like that. And then it's like, oh, my gosh, guys, come on. So it's not that every dog is going to get along and want to play with every dog.
Yep.
It's just not going to happen. We don't like every person, and we don't want to go to dinner with everyone we meet.
Right.
And if I don't want to, I'm not going to. But sometimes we put dogs in situations where we don't give them that option.
Yeah.
And if you see a dog that's like always on top in the like overhead position of another dog,
yeah.
That needs to be like disconnected. You need to be taking the lead and kind of taking that space and pushing that dog off and being like, no, you need to back up. You need to give that dog space.
Yeah.
Because at some point, the overcrowded dog is going to be one, fearful at this point.
Yep.
Or two, it's going to try to come back at it and it's going to turn into something negative for both dogs because that dog's going to snap. The other dog is either going to take that correction or it's going to come back with another correction and then you've got chaos.
Yeah.
I think that was it.
Okay. Sorry, I love
that. I cut that one off like real fast, but I think that was it.
Okay. Let's get into our question and answers. So I'm going to unmute. I think I muted one here. Anybody who has a question, you can jump in at this point here while I play the nice little Jeopardy music. Who we got? You're good. Go ahead.
You had started talking earlier about introducing dogs at a very young age to daily noises they may hear.
Uh-huh.
Maverick is extremely reactive to the vacuum cleaner.
That's crazy. I vacuumed in front of him like 2 days ago and he didn't make a peep. And that's always like kind of look for, to be honest with you. Now, he was in his kennel, so that may have made a difference. So okay. I will ask, do you have him loose while the vacuum is going?
Yes.
Okay, so that may be something. It kicks a lot of dogs into prey drive, right? It's making a fun noise. It's like going back and forth. It somewhat kind of makes it a toy to a degree. So I will say that he was in a kennel, but he wasn't barking at her being like, I need to play with it. But we do have definite solutions for vacuums and a lot with our dogs because they're Belgian Malinois and they'll eat anything that makes right. noise.
They hate what they love. It's love, not really hate. Love, they hate love to hate yeah. the vacuum cleaner.
Right.
It's like
they treat the sprinklers.
Right. They love the sprinklers.
Right. You shoot water right in my face. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. So we work really well, our dogs work really well, and we build that into the other dogs to work on a place bed while the vacuum is going on around the house. And we also switch between a manual vacuum and like the robot vacuums because those are common these days. And when dogs see a thing moving on its own, right, they're like, what is that?
Right.
And so place beds and place work and your dog staying on that place bed is always a really good exercise for them to work on while vacuums and things like that are going.
Did that answer your question, Heidi?
It did. Thank you.
Awesome.
We'll have to work with them. We haven't worked with him a whole lot on the place bed.
But, oh, well, he'll come back preloaded with place bed.
Right. We're working on place.
Yeah, we're working on place.
Right. And now we'll just incorporate some vacuum.
Yeah.
It's Cliff. I'm having a situation with Chinoa where she's, you'll call her and she doesn't want to listen. She's gotten to that point where she's getting stubborn or she'll go under the little chairs that are by the bar and just lay underneath the bar stools thinking that she's hiding from us and that she doesn't have to answer. Is that just that we just need to pull her back and just do some basic training to get that back? Cause she just kind of looks at you like, I'm not going to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what I would worry about, is all dogs are going to test whether you are going to hold them accountable or not. And so if she starts doing it more often, it's likely indicative of some interactions where she was able to avoid doing exactly what you said. And she's latched on to some of that and been like, cool. Yeah, this works for me.
Yeah. She's like, I pulled
the treats out to kind of coax her to go. And
now you change the game up, Cliff, because so
now you're in a hostage negotiation.
Right. Oh. So think about it. So if she figured out that if she doesn't come, that you pull the treats out,
She knows
that. What would you do?
Then she's gonna wait for the tree.
Yeah,
you gotta hold out. I'm gonna get extra under this couch until he until he pulls those out.
Get five more in your hand and then I'll come out.
Right. Yep. So the way we undo that before we reinforce more of that is we go back to that drag line and we try to elicit that behavior.
Yeah.
So take the opportunity to get a drag line on and then call her. And when she scurries under whatever it was that she scurries under so that you will go get the treat bag, it doesn't come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we go, no, come. And at that point, we're going to reinforce our no with leash pressure, because she knows leash pressure, she understands leash pressure, and she reacts to leash pressure because we know that she does that through all of the other training that she's been through.
Well, we had the drag line on her the other day, and I guess we were busy, and the drag line has been a victim of the mouth.
Oh no!
Oh no!
She hated it.
The worst. They make there's a couple dog leash companies that actually make lifetime warranties that I've tried a couple times, because they will replace the leash at no cost, no matter like if the dog chews it or not. So there's always
those small metal ones that she can't destroy.
Yep, you can also metal ones are also an option that they make for dogs that just are insistent on biting a leash. Also, I want to add in that when she does finally come, whether it's leash pressure or not, always reward that. Be like, good job. Be excited that she still came back, because if she gets a punishment or gets scolded once she finally is like, okay, I'm coming, she is going to be reluctant to keep doing that.
You got to throw a party, like a legit party.
Even if you're mad.
Right. Even if you're mad. You got to throw a party. Go ahead.
Yeah, I try to do the happy dance. And even if I'm mad, do the happy dance.
Good. That's
listen
great.
To me, and the sometimes perfect. I'll go towards to get her, and then she'll like, oh, she sees I'm coming, and she's like, she's out of there and go into her neck hiding spot.
Well, now that, and then that behavior, really, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Is it last 2 days? She's been really, really good.
Okay.
She is completely terrified of our pumpkins, because he likes to tap them and make them go.
Halloween, man.
Right, you know what I typically do?
Is terrible for dogs.
Right, Halloween is a rough one. Fourth of July, Halloween, Christmas.
But today, last 2 days, she has gotten into this thing where she likes to come and just sit up, sit with me in my chair, and she will bring her bowl to me when she's done eating.
Okay. Oh. Nice.
So she'll pick it up and bring it to me. She does have some failures in times of bringing it to me, but I make her work at it until she does bring it.
Good. That's awesome.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
You were going to say in regards to her taking off.
In regards to her taking off, that sounds just at the surface sounds like a game in and of itself. So she may be trying to engage you. She's looking for your attention. She's looking to engage in some sort of game.
Yeah.
So when that happens, what I would do is I would engage her in a different game, but on your terms.
Okay.
Because she's obviously looking for engagement from you.
Mm-hmm.
So give her what she wants, but on your terms, where you initiate a different game.
Yeah.
So that it's not related to her trying to initiate.
Okay. I gotcha.
Also, with the pumpkin thing, just put her bowl of food right next to the pumpkin. I guarantee you she's not going to turn down that food, and she's not going to care whether that pumpkin's there or not. That's my, like, that's my no fail, like, counter conditioning for dogs is, like, stack food around it. Just put treats around it, and the dog's going to be like, I'm going to even if they stretch towards it, they're going to want to get that food as long as it's not, like, too close, right? So just work your way towards it, and she'll eat out of that bowl, I guarantee you, if you offer it next to a pumpkin.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I was taking her out yesterday night, and she waited by the, usually she'll, you know, I have to say, stop, let me go out first. And like we talked about, And you know, and she'll do that. Sometimes I forget, and we're just both out the door, and we're like, it's a free for all. Mm-hmm. But I have to remember my own training. Usually, yeah. There's a problem. And but she stopped, and she wasn't going to go out. And I'm like, oh, I was so impressed with her. And we got outside, and we were walking, and I didn't realize then we were coming back.
Right, she stopped again.
And then the pumpkins were right there. And we have these huge, they're huge pumpkins.
Right, she's like, oh my goodness.
And they're the kind you tap, and then they start doing the, the Halloween noises.
Oh, those are.
And scary. So I just tapped. I usually just tap them. It's something I've done every year since we've had them. And she bolted for the door like nothing. So then I realized it's like she wasn't really being obedient going out the door. She just didn't want to go past the pumpkin.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes we can look past that because we just don't realize the variables.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put some little treats there and try to coax her that they're okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. I have lost my place here. We're going to finish this up with our listener projects. I've got two listener projects for you this week. The sound game. Number one, the sound game. Put your dog in a place or in a kennel or just in and around you in your home and play different household sounds such as the vacuum, the blender, hair dryer, doorbells, dogs barking, etc. And as you do that, just mark calm behavior. Mark it with yes. Good job.
Yep.
And give a reward. The reward can be food. The reward can be praise, affection, whatever your dog responds to. Slowly increase the volume over time while keeping the puppy relaxed or your dog. Doesn't matter. Puppy, older dog, same. Mm-hmm. Project number two, controlled stranger greetings. This is super important. So have recruit your most trusted calm friend. And have this calm friend ignore your puppy at first, letting the pup kind of like approach and like at its own pace, nice and slow. And then when your puppy shows calm curiosity, mark it with yes and then reward. And then end your interaction before the puppy becomes super overstimulated. Having a friend or a neighbor or somebody who can like work through that with you, but doesn't live very far away, so they can do it like repeatedly or over several days. Super, super important. Works really, really well. All right. Well, with that is all we have for tonight. So we're going to start closing this out. Once again, thank you for tuning in to Paw Print Academy tonight. Thanks for the questions, Cliff and Jen and Michael and Heidi. I appreciate you guys being here. And for anybody listening or tuning in to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anything like that, please give us a question. Leave us a question. Leave us a like. Leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. And let us know if you've got any cool ideas for us to incorporate. Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great night.
Good night.
Good night.